You're listening to part three of a four-part segment with Croft Woodruff on www.foodsarenotdrugs.com. Well, let's go on to the next part of the act, which is the part that actually should make most people, even if you don't care about natural health products, you should be fairly upset about this, and that's that trade agreements can become law without parliamentary approval, because what they've done is they've defined government in the act. They've changed it to include a government of a foreign state or a subdivision of a foreign state or an international organization of states.
Yeah.
So the question is, why would our federal cabinet want to incorporate documents from foreign governments or organizations as a law without parliamentary scrutiny?
Does that mean that toys covered with lead paint can now get into the country because it's okay in some other land overseas? Or we can have wheat flour laced with melamine that come from a foreign country because it's approved there, that we're going to get set? It sounds extreme, but I mean, that's about tantamount to what it is.
Well, what it really is that, I think it is that this is a way for them to further the assault on natural health products by bringing in the Codex Treaty under the radar, because right now, you know, they don't like this. They don't like the fact that there's... Tony Clement says that unfortunately there is a few people who are spreading misinformation about Bill 61. They're talking about basically us and you know, all the people who are against this legislation.
Well, it's just like they want to change the term of organic, you see, that so that it would incorporate genetically grown crops that are herbicide resistant, for instance, like canola oil and soybean oil and also cottonseed oil, although I haven't been able to figure out since when was cotton a part of our diet, and also some of these other seed oils that they want to foist on us. And is Tony Clement's department regularly checking these seed oils that are coming from herbicide-resistant crops? Are they testing those seed oils for residues of herbicide? These herbicides are carcinogenic, and they should be checking them, but they are not. So, I mean, this shows you how dishonest and incompetent, or both, these regulators are, and their political masters, as in the personality of Tony Clement.
Mm-hmm. So this is part of the democratic process, right? A bill goes through, the public has a chance to see it, and they can
protest.
Yeah,
we sure had a chance to see it when they put it to Parliament right then and there. There was no call for input before they even talk about putting the bill before the Parliament. We should have had input on this bill a long time ago. But no, they try to put it under the radar. They put it pretty close to their spring recess, the May 24th, Victoria Day recess. And so hopefully we will have forgotten about it by the time they resume in June.
Well, under this new legislation, bringing in the foreign government clause here, we wouldn't even have heard about it. It would have been tabled as a regulation, and just it wouldn't have gone through parliamentary review, and that would have been that.
How do you define totalitarianism or its subsets, fascism and communism? Because that is exactly what this type of legislation is. And anybody who fails to recognize that is either a fool or is part of the problem. And as far as the members of Parliament are concerned, any member of Parliament that accepts this bill as it's written now is an enemy of the people.
Well, what about the search and seizure powers?
Well, it's more fascism, isn't it? Especially when they can search and they can seizure without benefit of writ of habeas corpus, without benefit of being able to go to a judge and argue a case. And at the same time, the seized products are stored at your expense instead of the government's, as it should have been and as it used to be. So why such draconian measures?
Well, let's
it is, you see, they could do that to Merck or to Wyeth or Pfizer or any one of the big cartels, and it would be the tantamount to flicking a mosquito off the skin in terms of the government penalties and bother. But a small company that maybe does only maybe $500,000 a year or maybe a couple of $1 million a year by comparison to the billions that Big Pharma is doing, it's that such action is bankrupting. It's as simple as that. It's what it's clearly designed to do.
That's just it. The majority of the natural health product manufacturers, distributors, are small to medium-sized family-run enterprises in, mm-hmm. across Canada.
Well, it's just like somebody could find a new kind of berry that suddenly appears in their Loganberry patch, and they find that it has about 200 times the amount of vitamin C in any other equivalent berry or fruit by weight, and they would be wanting to market it as perhaps as a juice or as a dried product, or else they would be using the extract as part of a vitamin mineral supplement. And do you think they could afford to go through all the hoops? Even though we know that the berry is there, animals have been eating and haven't died, nobody's died from eating them, and yet the government's saying, no, you can't do that. And so whose turf is the government really protecting? Obviously not that of the consumer, and it's certainly not protecting people who are innovative in the work that they do in agriculture.
Well, 85% of the economy is small businesses, right? So, yeah. You know, who should they be protecting?
Exactly.
Obviously, you know, in a democracy, in a country as such as Canada, they should be listening to the majority of the people.
Well, where was the Mulroney government, the past Conservative government, the past Liberal governments, and the current? Where were they when we have farmers who are organic, but they have to put up with a farmer upwind from them who is spraying their crops with pesticide and herbicide? Especially herbicide, because the crop's herbicide resistant. They can't control the pollen drift from the herbicide resistant plant that's going to contaminate the organic crop, and then you've got a problem there. They haven't taken that consideration. I mean, I've never seen or thought governments could be so incompetent to allow such an evil genie out of the bottle as they have done.
Well, that's a whole different story. And
but it's all part of the thing, because it all stems from good agricultural practices that were established time ago.
That's the whole story behind Silvestrols.
Yeah.
Is that the herbicides prevent the fungus from ever producing
pesticides.
The Silvestrols.
Yeah, the pesticide, the fungicides prevent the berry from producing this anti-cancer factor that the plants develop in reaction, and it's in the whole berry itself. If you're out there picking wild berries, if you see the moldy ones, you bypass them, because the fact is that the unmoldy ones will have powerful anti-cancer properties. But this is the bottom line. That shows you how interested the government really is in finding an answer to health problems, whether it's cancer, whether it's diabetes, whether it's cardiovascular disease or arthritis. They've got to keep the big business of Big Pharma going. And Big Pharma blackmails the politicians every time by saying, if you don't put this bill through, we're going to shut down our plant in Ontario or Quebec and move these jobs out of the country. That's exactly what they do. And of course, the trouble is, if we've been exporting jobs all along overseas, thanks to so-called free trade agreements, and look at the logging industry in BC is shut down. I mean, that's a form of agriculture too. And of course, improper silviculture, as the forestry is called, can lead to dirty water and lost fishing streams for spawning.
So,
I'm sorry, but it is all encompassing.
It is.
You look at a beautiful carpet, a beautiful pattern, but you just have to cut one thread and you have interfered with that pattern. Well, that's the same thing with the living organism that this planet happens to be, and we are part of it. And we are shredding the threads that hold this whole thing together, and our scientists, who influence the government, don't seem to have the brains of Annette to recognize that and alert our politicians, who are equally research challenged, to what is happening.
Mm-hmm. And the back to the search and seizure powers. Well, it's okay. We can get off track, and
yeah,
that's good.
Well, I mean, it's so encompassing. You know, there's so many things that are tied together here. But this search and seizure challenge, I mean, this is clearly designed to bankrupt small and medium to large companies.
Exactly, but it goes beyond that, because it's a violation of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Well, the fact of the matter is, if you want to really get down to it, not only is it a violation of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, but actually this bill is ultra vires, which means it is beyond the power of Parliament to impose. And of course, if somebody wants to challenge this, they're going to have megabucks to go to court, because eventually it gets to the Supreme Court of Canada. And if the judges at the Supreme Court are as honest as we hope they are, and as competent as we hope they are, they would throw it out in a thrice.
Well, they bypass the whole need to go before a judge to get a search warrant, to go.
That's right.
To get a court order. They
so
can,
you have to, but to counteract, you've got to go to court. To go to court costs money. It's just like we had a situation in my family where a grandniece was bitten by a dog in a restaurant where a dog had no business being. And was the lawyer interested in doing anything about it? No.
In terms of examples like the restaurant industry, mm-hmm. restaurants like that should be regulated. They should be shut down.
Well,
regulations should be designed to shut down.
The recourse that my relatives did was a nephew and his wife was to report the offending business to the public health authorities, and as well as to the RCMP. And the ironical part of this business is it's the only place where you're kind of captive while you're waiting to catch a ferry. And this business is about the only place where you can get a bite to eat while you're waiting, because it's a long ferry ride and it's a long run, you know, from one place to the other. And so you can see this is a menace of public health medicine, and it should have been what happened to the inspectors when they opened up. And oh, by the way, I subsequently found out that this business has offended before on the other side of where the ferry lands. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Well, Health Canada now is under Bill C-51. They're trying to tell manufacturers of natural health products and other regulated persons where they have to keep their documents, including their computer records. So, you know, just to make it easier.
Well, the trouble is when they can seize documents, documents can disappear, as they have been known to happen in government, and computer records can also be altered and fabricated, so that doesn't mean a thing. All I can say to the business is they better make sure that they have backup on everything they do and that they are placed in a safe place where government can't get at it, and that they can get at it when they finally have their chance to go in court, just to show who the liars really are in the industry and in government.
Well, when an inspector can just show up on his sole discretion without having to go before a judge, can enter your place of business, can search and seize products,
yeah.
can take it,
well,
take property, computers,
yeah.
records,
yeah.
charge yeah. you for the transportation, charge you for the storage, charge you for disposal.
You see, up until now, an inspector could go in unannounced and say, well, you know, having look here and there, oh, I think we have a problem here. We'll have to, they put it under quarantine. And then the company has to take the opportunity to rectify what the problem is. That no problem, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what it was. But now they want such draconian measures. I could understand perhaps, you know, if it's some foreign company that's coming in here and violating all the rules of sanitation from beginning to end.
Well, it'd be like that restaurant example. Somebody a health inspector comes in and sees.
You should be able to shut the place down like right now.
Yeah.
You know, or else they give them so many. I should imagine they should be able to clean a place up within at least 15 to 20 days, if not 30 days at the most.
Yeah, they pass a.
They padlock the place otherwise.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the analogy with the natural health products industry, what do you think is just power?
Well,
like, I mean, right now, if they come in and it's covered in mold and you know,
it's contaminated.
Contaminated.
You've got rat feces all over the place. in an area that's supposed to be sterile. You go into any plant where they are formulating and tableting. These people are wearing special clothing and masks. They have hair nets on. And the place is absolutely sealed, so that there's no chance of contamination. I mean, who are they kidding about compliance? You see, they have what we call good manufacturing practices. And every so often, Health Canada, or its predecessor, Health Protection Branch, would call in all the stakeholders, and in this case, the health industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the vitamin manufacturers and food processors and that, and setting out what are the standards, going over the standards that they have been set out, and seeing where improvements need to be made, and so on and so forth. I was a part of that when I was president of the Canadian Health Association, so you get a pretty good idea of where the corpses are buried or where they should be buried, and it's as simple as that. Now, if a person isn't in compliance with good manufacturing practices, no problem. You know, but to have these kinds of draconian measures that they've instituted with Bill 51 and Bill C-51 and Bill C-52 is obviously, the whole scope is really in favor of Big Pharma. That's all there is to it.
Well, that brings up another topic, because Bill C-51 and Bill C-52, according to an email that I just received, Big Tobacco is exempt.
Now, Big Tobacco is what, responsible for how many thousand lung cancer deaths a year in Canada?
55,000
55,000 lung cancer deaths a year thanks to Big Tobacco. And even though they are taxing the tobacco out of the existence of the people who are not so well off, the dustbin scavengers and so on, so much for health protection, eh? And what about this business of so-called public health measures, when in this case fluoridation, when the fluoride isn't even pharmaceutical grade? It's not drug grade. It's just industrial waste that they're dumping in, contaminated with uranium and lead and arsenic and other trace minerals that have potential toxicity, even though they might be in trace amounts. You know, it is the death of a thousand cuts that eventually kills, and this is what they're allowed to put in drinking water under the guise of public health measure. I mean, anybody who realizes, and I know for a fact because I had a close relative who worked as a lead burner, replacing the lead linings of tanks in where they were storing the fluoride from the scrubbers, where they scrub out the fluoride gases along with gaseous uranium and arsenic and lead and mercury and other radioactive isotopes such as radium and thorium. You name it, that's in phosphate rock. It's there. It comes off in the gases. Stored in these vats, and they pump this out into stainless steel tankers lined with neoprene. Why? Because the fluoride is so corrosive it will cut through stainless steel like it would cut through like a hot knife would cut through butter. And this is what they pump into these tanks, and they ship it off to cities like they did in Seattle way back in the 1970s. And they were just dumping in the Lake Hollis Bolas at Lake the Tolt and Cedar River systems of Seattle, where they get their drinking water from, and depending on wind and current to disperse the fluoride. But the Seattleites certainly didn't know that they were getting all these other benefits besides the fluoride. But obviously the public health officers that promote this stuff in places like Prince George and I don't know about Prince Rupert, they might have stopped doing it, but Hazleton probably. There's only a few cities. Cranbrook is another one. They still dump it in the water. And then there's 70% of Alberta is fluoridated. They're getting the same crap. It's, as I said, it's not pharmaceutical grade. I mean, if you want aspirin, you want pharmaceutical grade aspirin, don't you?
Yeah.
So you would expect the same if they're going to put something that is supposed to have a therapeutic effect, in this case, preventing tooth decay, which, of course, it really doesn't. It actually causes thyroid problems and also bone cancer if you're exposed to it long enough. And, of course, it means a lifetime if you're living in some of these cities. You would expect it to be pharmaceutical grade, and it's not. It's not pure fluoride. It's contaminated with all these other elements that have already you know, elucidated on. So that's the competence of public health, and it lays right at the door of the federal government and Health Canada as it is constituted today. And of course, every provincial health department is equally complicit in this pollution. You know, this is what it is. The solution to pollution is dilution, and that's what they're doing with the fluoride.
So I wonder if, you know, the chemical manufacturers of, you know, the fluoride and the various other industrial chemicals are also getting an exemption under Bill C-51.
I would imagine they are. Yeah, because when something like this is likely to hit the legal fan, you know, there's going to be a lot of heads rolling. And some of these people, they might be out of office, they may have retired, but still and all, they could be legally held to account. This is what's happening with war crimes, and as far as I'm concerned, deliberately contaminating public water supply, potable water supply, with industrial fallout and pollutants is tantamount to a crime against humanity.
You've been listening to Foods Are Not Drugs with Croft Woodruff, part 3 of 4. Please join us for the final segment of Croft Woodruff, foodsarenotdrugs.com.